Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, it's a quarterly investment outlook special. Fidelity Personal Investing has completed its latest outlook on the markets, the regions and the funds that it believes will perform in the months to come. It's been a good year so far for investors, but there's no shortage of things to worry about. The Outlook's author, Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity, joins me to talk it over. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. So far, 2019 has been a year of recovering asset prices, but that doesn't mean it's been a comfortable ride. This month has seen a wobble in markets, and central banks now seem more anxious to stimulate growth than they do to curb enthusiasm and overborrowing. This is the picture laid out in the latest quarterly investment outlook from Fidelity, and the outlook's author, Tom Stevenson, is here to talk us through it. Tom, if there's an overriding theme in the outlook this time, it's the question over whether we're heading for a global recession. It's in the headlines of all the time, of course. It's fundamental to investing markets. So what are the latest indications that you've laid down in the outlook?
Yeah, I think that is the big question for investors at the moment. And, you know, if you look back a year to when the market last had a big wobble, that was exactly the question we were facing then. You know, are we heading into a recession? I'll come back to the comparison with last year, because I do think it's quite interesting. But just in terms of what's pointing us in that direction, I think if you look at the recent manufacturing data, some of the service sector data as well, it really is, you know, looking a bit worrying. There's a definite slowdown going on. The impact of the trade tensions between the US and China are clearly beginning to spill over into actual activity. Things like Brexit and the uncertainty there is spilling over into investment activity here in the UK, but also in Europe as well. So I think, you know, the data is not looking good. And then if you look at the messages which are being sent out by the bond market, for example, we've talked about this in the past, I won't go into any detail about it, but this yield curve, which always it has in the past indicated trouble ahead of recessions in the past, we've got this flat yield curve at the moment. That's suggesting that we should be a bit concerned. So yes, there are concerns, but just offsetting that, you know, I talk a lot to our investment team here. They study a lot of what they call leading indicators, forward-looking economic indicators, and a number of those are actually quite positive at the moment. So it's by no means, I think, a clear-cut case that we are heading into recession, but it's clearly the worry at the moment.
And one of the things that has changed through this year has been the direction that central bankers are facing in. Now, for a long time, they were in a hawkish mode. They wanted to curb borrowing costs. That's changed, isn't it, this year? You've had the Fed definitely starting to cut rates. The Bank of England has been the odd man out slightly. It's been saying no, the next move for rates is going to be higher. They've changed tone as well. And that is a change in the outlook.
I think so. Yeah, I said that I'd look at this comparison with a year ago, and I think that's the key difference. So if you go back a year, you know, we had two big issues. One was worries about growth. The trade wars were underway a year ago. But at the same time, as growth was slowing down, central banks and the Fed in particular were tightening policy. The Fed was desperate to normalise policy to get some dry powder, some ammunition, if you like, to fend off the next recession when it came. That was then. If you look at now, same situation with trade worries and fears about growth slowing down. But the key difference is that central banks, and particularly the Fed, are now easing back on policy. At the Fed, we had two rate cuts in the third quarter in July and again in September. The expectation is that we'll get another rate cut at the end of this month. So, you know, clearly interest rates in the US have peaked at between 2.25% and 2.5%, and they're heading down. Big question about how far they can go, though.
Yeah, and you within the outlook, you'll give indications of whether you're positive, negative, or neutral on certain assets. You haven't made any really, really wholesale changes to your outlook. You mentioned there the bond market, and in previous outlooks, you've mentioned the bond market saying a slightly different thing from the equity market. And this time round, you say the bond market looks to be getting things a bit more right. Isn't that a bad sign for stock markets?
Well, I think that the bond market has been better at predicting this slowdown. We've seen a decline in bond yields. And of course, because yields and prices move in opposite directions, that's meant that it's actually been a very good time to be invested in bonds. It's been a good year for bonds. I think that, you know, the bond market is pointing towards a slowdown. And as I say now, I think increasingly, you know, the stock market is picking up on that. And actually, and I think that that is a concern. You know, it doesn't feel like a bear market is imminent because of this stimulus that we're seeing from central banks. But I do think that the bond market was better at spotting this than the equity market.
Yeah. Okay. Well, linked to economic performance of the economy in general is inflation. And that matters, of course, because that dictates whether the returns you get are going to be worth anything. Now, inflation has been quite low in developed markets. Central bankers aren't that worried about it because they're cutting borrowing costs. But you identify a danger that inflation could return. Can you explain that?
Yes. I mean, if you look at the data around the world, you'd say, well, inflation is not a concern at all. Inflation is at historically low levels and not many people are concerned about it. So why then would the investment experts here at Fidelity be spending so much time at the moment talking about inflation? And they are. It's a big concern. Well, the big concern is that, you know, inflation never looks like a problem just before it is a problem. I printed off a chart of the inflation rate going back 50 years. And you can see there's this huge spike in the early 1970s, which, you know, those of us of a certain age can remember very clearly. 70s and 80s, inflation was a problem. But if you look at the years just ahead of that, in the 60s, inflation bounced around at very similar levels to where it's bouncing around now. So just because inflation is low doesn't mean that we shouldn't worry about it. Now, what might trigger inflation? Well, one of the big changes in the world at the moment, I think, is this move away from globalization towards a more populist, nationalist approach to politics and running the economy. What that means is that governments are becoming much more sort of open to the idea of spending heavily to boost the economy. And if you look at some of the promises that we've had out of the US, and in fact the reality of tax cuts from Donald Trump, and closer to home here in the UK, the Conservative Party is talking a very unconservative game when it comes to spending. More police, more hospitals, not worrying about balancing the books. You know, austerity really has been consigned to the dustbin of history, if you like. Now, when governments start spending like that, that can trigger inflation. If you go back to the 1970s, what triggered the inflation in the 1970s? Well, you know, lots of things, but fundamentally it was spending on the Vietnam War. That's what spiraled out of control and caused inflation. So I think that, you know, there's a real concern that this fiscal stimulus, this move to populism, could drive inflation in the future. So it's certainly something that investors need to be cognizant of.
And this intersects again with central banks, doesn't it? Because central banks actually are quite encouraging of governments to do their part. You'll hear the ECB say this a lot in particular. You know, the fiscal policy has to step in where monetary policy can't. Monetary policy, of course, is interest rates set by central banks. And that it may be getting lower, borrowing costs, but it's from quite a low base already. There's only a small range of what can be done in terms of monetary policy. Fiscal policy seems like a more of an unknown quantity in today's day and age, right?
Yes. I mean, I think what we're seeing is that monetary policy has essentially run out of road. You know, I talked about US interest rates peaking at under 2.5% and heading down towards zero. We've seen in the Eurozone that negative interest rates, there's a lot of opposition to these. They make it very difficult for companies, banks in particular, to make profits and therefore to lend money. It makes it very difficult for savers to live on their savings. Negative interest rates, actually, there are quite a lot of, you know, bad consequences of negative interest rates. You don't really want to go there. So in theory, and you're right, the ECB has called on governments to step in and to start spending to fill that gap. In theory, you know, there's no limit to what governments can do. They can print money. They can drop money out of helicopters if they want to. You know, they can always stimulate the economy. The problem is that the price that you pay for that largesse is inflation. So that's the concern. But I do think that that's where we're inevitably going to go because monetary policy has run out of road.
And in the UK context, of course, and in the US context as well, I suppose, there are elections to win and voters to, incentivized to vote for particular parties. And you can see how in the UK promises are being made on spending. Maybe tax cuts are the next thing to come if there's an election campaign. You remain quite negative about the UK equity market, but you also note in the outlook that UK shares look quite cheap. So what's preventing you being more positive about the UK on valuation grounds, if nothing else?
Well, I think valuation is the main area of positivity about the UK market. If you look at UK shares, they're currently trading on something like 12 times earnings, which is at the low end of the historical range. The expectation is that earnings are going to grow at sort of 6 or 7%, which is not bad, and actually creates a bit of a cushion, a bit of a buffer in case there is a bit of a slowdown. The dividend yield we've talked about in the past between 4 and 5%. So there is a clear valuation case for investing in UK shares. The concern about the UK, I think, is related to Brexit. And for me, it's this idea that, you know, all this talk about let's just get Brexit done rather misses the point, as far as I'm concerned. Getting to Brexit, leaving the EU, is actually just the start of the process. It's the start of a long, difficult negotiation, which will last for many years to come. We've seen the effect that uncertainty has had on investment by companies and consumer sentiment for individuals. You know, that's not going to go away. And so I think that the outlook for the UK economy is pretty subdued. And you have to bear that in mind. But it's offset by valuations. And it's also offset by the fact that we've also talked about in the past, which is that the UK is a very outward looking market. So what's going on with UK listed shares is actually not that much to do with what's going on in the UK economy.
Well, I wanted to pick up something that you write in the outlook, which is to do with valuations in the UK, which is concerning those growth stocks, high, fast-growing companies, healthily growing companies. Now, you compare the valuations of that type of company in the UK versus other markets, and they're relatively expensive. I think you have this figure of 20 times price to earnings in the UK for that type of company, but that's cheaper than other markets. So there's bits of the UK market, and maybe it's this international-facing bit that you talk about, that might be shielded from domestic issues, which also looks cheap. And that is going to attract people.
Yes. And in fact, yeah, it's interesting you should mention that, because a conversation I was having with one of our investors here who actually invests in a European fund was making this comparison between UK options within the European context and other European companies, comparable companies. So, you know, you might have a big pharmaceuticals company or a big consumer goods company. The UK equivalent is trading at a much cheaper valuation than the European and certainly the American equivalent. So I do think that, you know, we may well look back on this moment and think, well, that was a moment of, you know, bleak uncertainty, but actually it represented a valuation opportunity to get into the UK market at a time when things were cheap.
Yeah, indeed. And just finally on the UK, it's not just about Brexit, is it? There's an election coming that could lead to a Corbyn government. Lots of people are worried about that. The polling doesn't suggest that's particularly likely, but that can change. It doesn't actually have to be likely that Labour win an outright majority for Jeremy Corbyn to get into power. Because of this Brexit dynamic, any kind of coalition that's not the Conservative Party stands a chance. And if you look at it through that lens, it's a really close election, isn't it?
It is. And in a way, that sort of coalition style of politics, though, is, I think, a positive for investors, because it does rather suggest that, you know, either side is unlikely to be able to force through sort of the most radical options. That whatever they're suggesting, you know, whether that's you know, tax rises from Labour, or a sort of, you know, hard Brexit from the other side, they may not have the ability to do that because they just haven't got the votes in Parliament. And, you know, if Labour is constrained by a resurgent Liberal Democrats, for example, they may well just rein in their more extreme instincts. So I think that, you know, actually investors should be grateful for the more fragmented nature of UK politics, because it might actually mean that it's a more moderate outlook.
Okay, well, just finally then, this is the third quarter of the year. I wanted to contrast where we are now with last year. It was in October 2018 that markets began to stumble and fall, and they kept falling until the turn of the year. And then since then, and pretty much for the whole of 2019, we've had this recovery. What does that experience tell us about how to handle the uncertainty now? Because lots of people are going to be asking whether now's a good time to sell and whether cash looks attractive. So what is the lesson of the last 12 months?
Okay, so well, we talked about the reasons why the market was weak in the fourth quarter last year, these growth concerns coupled with tightening monetary policy. But the impact was very extreme, and we got to Christmas and markets had sold off a lot. 14% reduction in the US, 10% reduction in the UK. So not really a bear market, but certainly a correction on both sides of the Atlantic. Things looked good value at the beginning of the year, and it's turned out that way, that we in the first quarter, we had a sharp rally, a V-shaped rally that carried on into the second quarter. The momentum has certainly slowed down in the third quarter. But I think the lesson that we can learn is that, you know, when you get these sell-offs, as long as the fundamentals of the economy are not catastrophic, then the market does tend to bounce back. So it's a case of holding your nerve throughout these market cycles and not panicking at the bottom, which of course is the human instinct to do so.
Yeah, and I've, you know, we've written and spoken about this before, but if last year you were of a mind to sell, and there was plenty of reasons why you might want to do that, you would have sold at this point last year, and you would have felt very, very good about that decision all through the rest of the year. The problem then comes, when do you buy back in? Because markets begin to rise. The headlines are no more positive. They're still very, very negative. You've got to then, having made that initial decision in October last year, which would have been relatively easy to do, you've then got to make a much harder decision to buy back in. And if you hadn't got it right, the market recovery since then suggests that actually you just would have been better staying invested.
Yeah. I mean, you've summed it up really well. I mean, trading the market, it involves two decisions. It involves, you know, a sell decision, which is easy, and it involves a buy back decision, which is much more difficult, because it involves going against the herd, going against your instincts, and going against the headlines. And that's extremely difficult, and most people fail to do that. And that's why, you know, most investors' experience of the market is less good than the headline stats would suggest, because they don't catch the top and the bottom at all. It's very difficult to do.
Yeah, it is indeed. Okay, well, Tom, that is it for now. You've been talking on this for hours, it seems. So, well done. Thanks an awful lot for coming in. The Investment Outlook is available in many and varied forms. There are print and digital PDF versions, as well as a webcast, which you've just recorded, and that can be rerun on the website if people log on to fidelity.co.uk. And in there, and we haven't spoken about them, is included Tom's picks for funds that he believes are well-placed for the period that we have ahead.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.